Blog Talk Radio.
Listen as your day unfolds. Challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool. You gotta be calm. You gotta stay together. All I know is love will save the day. Herald what your mother said. Read the books your father read. Try and solve the puzzles in your own sweet time. Some may have more cash than you. Others have a different view. My, oh, my, hey. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know is love will save the day. Time asks no questions, it goes on without you. Leaving you behind if you can't stand the pain. The world keeps on spinning, can't stop it if you try to. The best part is danger staring you in the face. Oh, well then listen as your day unfolds.
You gotta be
challenged, what the future
holds.
Try to keep your head up.
You gotta be tough.
You gotta be stronger. Love is they may cause you.
You gotta be calm.
Go ahead and
stay together.
All I know is love will save the day. Listen as your day unfolds.
You gotta be
challenged, what the future holds.
You gotta be tough,
you gotta be stronger. Love is they may cause you.
You gotta be calm,
you gotta stay together.
I'm a certain believer in that. You can believe me. And you might be saying, well, who are you? Not really. Because if you're tuning in here, you know where you are. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. And yes, my name is Daryl Clark. And yes, you are at the right place at the right time. Thank you so much for taking the time out this evening to tune in again to Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out we bring you news and information that's gathered from around the country, sometimes from around the world, because we cross the borders from time to time to bring you this enlightening and empowering, encouraging, and inspiring information that's hopefully going to instill you to get involved and make a difference. No talking heads here. This is certainly news we like to say that you can use. It's It's news for you, by you, and of you. Yes, by you and of you. Because many of our guests and or topics come from you, the listener. And so don't stop sending information, your suggestions. If you haven't done so and you're interested, send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _ C-L-A, 18 at msn.com. And if that's too much for you to gather, just drop it to our main mailbox, which is progressivenews@msn.com. That's just progressive news, no spaces, news@msn.com. And we'll pick up your email, and if it's a suggestion that, well, we deem is something the masses really need to hear about, and it's not something that you're going to typically hear on mainstream. We don't like to do mainstream media. You can get that from your major networks and get all of that stuff that's too often skewed by political or business interest. We don't do that here. Also, let me just give you a heads up. If you're going to bring or suggest a guest or topic, we are going to investigate it to make sure it's something that is valid and reasonable. This isn't your local Esquire or Star magazine type information program. Everything has to be vetted and has to be grounded in reality. So yeah, we vet every guest and every topic. But with that said, please keep it coming and let us know your suggestions as well. We're open for suggestion and criticism, if you will. We're always looking to improve. So with all of that said, tonight is no exception in terms of what we're bringing to the fold, to the airwaves. I'm particularly excited. Again, this is a labor of love for me. It's something I've done for 10 years now. Many of our listeners have been with us for those 10 years. And I'm just, thrilled in doing this. At some point, we may do sponsors. We're looking at that now because there is a certain cost. There's an opportunity cost to doing this program, if nothing else. Of course, opportunity cost is the opportunity lost. And so there are other opportunities that we're not able to take advantage of, which, in effect, is time-bound. And, of course, time is money. So at some point, we will be looking for sponsors. So if you'd like to keep that in mind, let us know of someone or company that might be interested in sponsoring Progressive News Weekly in the future. We are growing, I'm proud to say. Every week we have new listeners, and so welcome to our new listeners. We have listeners as far as California. We have listeners in Canada. Shout out to our friends up there. And here I go again. When I do this, I invariably leave a state or city out, and I get an email. Daryl, how could you forget us down here in Alabama? Or how could you forget us over here in Michigan? I don't dare leave Ohio out. Everyone that's been listening to me for any at the time know I am a Clevelander, born and raised, proud of it, Cleveland Browns fan all the way. Go Browns. This is our year. Sorry, folks. Yeah, we had to take Beckham from New York. Anyway, that's a sports trivia thing. Not really trivia. Shout out to my folks out there in Ohio and Cleveland. Roof, roof, roof for the Browns. And, of course, out here, New Jersey, New York, East Coast, New England, Florida, Atlanta, and all of Georgia. Got relatives in the southern part. So all of my folks all over the country, because I've now left people out in St. Louis, and my partner, my partner's in Memphis. Wouldn't I like to just leave him out? He'd be like, hey, what's up, Daryl? You forget about me? No, we just love what we do here. And again, please continue to encourage us and inspire us and bring us your thoughts. Now, as I was saying, today is particularly special. Pennsylvania, see, he's coming back to me. Folks, I'm forgetting. And anyway, everybody, you know I night. We're going to have fun. Finally, we got, I think, 2 days without rain. This has been the most rainiest season. Who said there's not global warming? That's another topic. In the near future, we'll have scientists back with us. We've had numerous scientists over the years from National Wildlife Federation, Sierra Club, and the like. Greenpeace and others. So we're going to be talking more about what's happening with this global warming and this rain as well, as the ice caps begin to melt. So again tonight, whenever I have a guest who is not just a remarkable mind, which our guest tonight is, but someone who I've known for years and I respect highly as a mentor and to some extent a colleague, it just becomes more than a labor of love. It just becomes fun. Reminds me of my homeboy, Arsenio Hall, who is a homeboy, and we spent some time, a little bit of time together. I don't want to, you know, put it out there like, yeah, we were hanging buddies. But Arsenio, I know you're out there. They say 7 degrees of separation. You know I'm trying to reach you. I want you on my show because you're my homeboy, Clevelander, one far down the road. But he used to say when he had his show, and he used to bring on some of his favorite musical artists, like the Delphonics and those guys, you know, Stylistics, you know, Stevie Wonder, to say, I can't believe I'm living this life. This is like a joy. So this is kind of like that in a sense because the guest tonight, I've done numerous projects with her. She is truly a humanitarian, to say the least. But to me, that's the foundation for this person. She's known for other accolades, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Get on my mail list, folks. If you were on the mail list, you'd know who I'm talking about because you would have gotten an email about tonight's program and who the guest is. So, yeah, I'm purposely not saying the person's name. Now, so you're going to just kind of suffer with that for a few more seconds. All right, long enough. The bumper tune, as I always like to give a shout-out for, was none other, and some of you probably maybe guessed it, then Miss Natalie Cole, and may she rest in peace. What a talk about a remarkable mind, a great talent. Her and of course her dad Nat King Cole, and I just felt like, you know, I kind of go with the energy flow as to who I'm going to use for the bumper tune, and often it's tied in with what the particular program is about, but. And it's often moments before the program that it comes to me what I want to play. But somehow she just popped into my head, and I think it was more the song popped into my head, You Gotta Be. And I thought that just ties in with our guest, and I'm just going to mention who it is, Miss Stephanie DeJeuness. And I know those of you who have been listening for some time, you've heard Miss DeJeuness with us before. I'm going to talk a little bit about her background, because if I talk too much, it would take up most of my program. About her background, but surely she is, among other things, a motivational individual. Call her a motivational speaker, if you will. She's best known as an educator, 4 decades of work in the educational field at all levels, including and up to right now being the founder of her own foundation right now, and also founder of an academy, educational academy, her and her husband. So we're going to be getting into more information there. But suffice it to say, back to You Gotta Be and the lyrics with Natalie Cole, you know, it just speaks volumes. And if you get a chance, Google the song. It's called You Gotta Be. GOTTA by Natalie Cole, and so the lyrics go, listen as your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds, try to keep your head to the sky, love. others, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. But you got to be. You got to be bad. You got to be bold. You got to be wiser. You got to be hard. You got to be tough. You got to be stronger. You got to be cool. You got to be calm. You got to stay together. All I know is love will save the day. Whew! Mm. And it goes on. It's just beautiful lyrics, and it just reminds me of Miss Stephanie DeJanessa and what she's all about in terms of encouraging, especially youth, but not just youth. She's done workshops for adults. She even has a copyrighted workshop for parents and grandparents. So truly a remarkable mind. So without further ado, we're going to bring to the airwaves Miss Stephanie DeJanessa. But again, just wanted to say a few little things about Miss Stephanie DeJanessa, just to give you a little bit of background. All right. First of all, as I said, she spans at least 44 decades in the educational field. She's the co-founder and executive director of New Covenant Christian Academy. She's an author, surely a community advocate. As I mentioned, she's developed curriculum and workshops at all levels. She's been recognized numerously over the decades, and I'll just mention a few. She was awarded for her acumen and efforts to make a difference by Somerset Patriots Organization as a community hero. She is one of the Heritage Who's Who from 2007. I just so much I can choose from here. Nubian Union awarded her the Footsteps in Service Award. And I'll just end with the Malcolm Nelson Mills Empowering Positive Growth Award, which she received in 2014. So we're going to have a good old time talking about education, but it doesn't stop there because, as I said, she's a humanitarian. So Miss Stephanie and I, we don't have dialogue without getting a little bit deep. We don't have to put the waders on, but you may get your ankles a little wet on because we're not surface type folks, and we want to give you something that you can truly digest. This is not pop plablum baby food here. So without further ado, I bring to the airways Miss Stephanie DeJanessa.
Miss DeJanessa, are you with us?
Thank you for bringing me onto the airwaves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly our pleasure. No, we got started a few minutes late, but we're not shortchanging it, so we may have to push the program out a little bit this evening because we want to make sure we get it as much as we can in. So, and of course, even then, if we happen to reach the top of the next hour, I'm going to ask you if you could come back and continue. So we don't shortchange. That's one thing here in Progressive News, a little different from some of mainstream, is. Too often you have pertinent topics on mainstream. You may see in the morning news and they give it 5 minutes or 10 minutes or they do a segment, but then that's it. So, no, this I want to have ongoing dialogue because, and here I am preaching not just to the choir, I'm preaching to the preacher how important education is in America, in the world, and especially in our communities. So, with that said, we had a discourse. It's been probably about 6 weeks now, at least a month, I want to say, 3 to 4 weeks to a month earlier, and we ran out of time. And I said, okay, we've got to pick this conversation on education up. And at that time, we were talking a little bit about, the end of the school year, and what some of the things, students might be facing. So I want to pick up on some of that. And, of course, in the course of this conversation, I'd like to touch base on your book before we get off the air. And I'd like to talk a little bit about not just education for our youth, but I want to just have a little discourse about education, period, because a lot of adults, especially with what's happening in society and the advancement of technology and so forth, are looking to expand, you know, themselves as well. So that's one I want to kind of toss at you. You can put there sort of in the back burner that I want to bring up later. But right now, yeah, it's that time of year. I guess there may be a few schools open. I understand there are some schools, like some charter schools, some private schools that still may be, you know, closing out the year this week. But for the most part, most of our students, whether it be, you know, at the middle or elementary or especially at the high school and collegiate level, you know, have gotten that piece of paper. And now what? So I'm going to, you know,
what?
Hand the mic over to you and talk with us a little bit about some of that.
Well, obviously, students get very excited as they get ready to move into the summer, and now the summer is officially here. It's here on the calendar, and for most students, unless they're going to official summer school, they're out for the summer. And many parents have been feverishly thinking about what they're going to do with their student, whatever age that student might be, whether they're going to put that child in summer camp or send the child to visit grandma, whatever the situation might be. Summer affords students and their families some incredible opportunities. And in fact, they really need to capitalize on those opportunities, because whether it's called summer setback or summer slide or summer learning loss, that is a very, very real phenomenon. And it's a phenomenon that's been studied from as far back as the early 1900s. Earlier research indicated that students would lose about 1 month of their previous academic year's learning over the summer. But more recent research is saying that the loss could be upwards of 2 or more months if, in fact, there isn't activity over the summer that keeps that student engaged in learning. And what's really, really, I think, important for us to know is the decline in this, call it what you will, learning loss, is steeper or sharper in math than it is for reading, and the extent of the loss tends to be larger at higher grade levels. And so that's something to really, really keep in mind. You know, parents will say, well, I don't really want to fight with my child. I don't want to, quote, make my child read. I want to make my child do this. I don't want to make my child do that. Well, I mean, obviously there are ways to help our students like things a little bit more, but who wants their child to go into school in September and they're already behind the eight ball because they've lost some of the previous year's academic learning? Sad to say, among students of color, black and Latino students in particular, because they tend to gain less over the school year for a variety of reasons, they tend to lose more over the summer compared to white students. There's a theory called the Fawcett theory, or the research resource Fawcett theory. And what happens with students who are lower-income students, less advantaged relative to resources, is they lose more over the summer because they're not in school and they don't have those various resources available for them. They actually slow down for students in disadvantaged backgrounds. So it's a phenomenon that our parents, all of our parents, our grandparents need to know about it, that it's real. And they have to be very intentional, very strategic about the kinds of things they're going to do with their student over the course of the summer. And that's really what I had hoped, you know, we could spend a little time on. It's indisputable that this is what's going to happen to virtually everyone, but more so among children of color and children who might be in disadvantaged backgrounds.
So, Ms. DeJeunesse, let me ask a question with that. The statistics then also bear out that on the opposite end of that spectrum, because you mentioned black and Latino are especially affected for various reasons, and you mentioned the faucet theory, which is very interesting, that those that tend to do well, because you said there's definitely a correlation between the summer slide and the loss of achievement in the following fall session and on into the following year, especially in math at higher levels. Are statistics bearing out that those that don't have that are doing something to counter that? Like they have summer programs that, for example, I would suspect that those in the Asian community, for example, I think about the end of year spelling bee. It's gotten to a point where it's become basically an Indian spelling bee. I think there may be three non-Indians that were in the finalists. I think eight ended up getting the award this year for the first time in history. And I know you're familiar because being the educator, you are.
Yeah.
So now are those students who tend to achieve higher by background in terms of, you know, race and culture, and they, what I've seen of the Asian community, I guess the white community somewhere up in there, generally speaking, are they doing things different? I mean, there are other factors, I'm sure, income level, just the level of education.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, those things come into play, income level, educational level of the parents and the like. But I think most schools, be they district public schools, district charter schools, private schools, when we had our academy, we had a summer reading list. We had summer reading, we had summer learning projects. Most schools are very much aware of the summer learning loss. They don't want their students to succumb to that. After all, if your students are losing a month to maybe more of the previous year's academic learning, then that means when you come back in the fall, you have to do a lot of review work. That's wasted time. And so what our parents and our grandparents have to be dedicated to, and I say that word dedicated to, is when a school puts out that summer reading list, or a school puts out particular learning projects that they would like their students to engage in at the various levels, well, the parents and the grandparents should capitalize on that. And that doesn't mean you whip out the summer reading list on August the 31st. These lists generally go out in June, or it goes on the summer packet. The proverbial summer packet goes home in the backpack on the last day of school. Parents, grandparents, other concerned adults need to be looking for it and making sure that their students are engaged in those activities. Now, if the school is not putting out material to enhance the students' summer experience, well, you can't throw up your hands and say, well, you know, my child or my grandchild's school didn't do it. You know, this is a phenomenon that students lose learning, so that means that your family has to do something about it. And even if a family says, well, we're not educated here, there are still other people who will help students, and you just have to get your student to those people or to those kinds of programs. And it's not always about money, Daryl. You know, a lot of times people think, oh, well, I have no money to hire a tutor. There are some students who will tutor for community service hours. So there's always a way to get around it. It isn't about money. Libraries are the cheapest state going, and libraries have all kinds of summer programs, and people just need to avail themselves of it. So what I wanted to do is basically give some suggestions of what parents and grandparents and concerned adults can do, because they should not be thinking, not my child, you know, not my grandchild or whatever. It's a phenomenon. And even if your student is a very strong student, National Honor Society or always makes the honor roll, many families will use the summer to help their students accelerate. And that's actually something I used to suggest to our college-bound students. I said, oh, if you want to get a good start, find out the syllabus for the next year, get some books on that topic, so that when you get to your class in college, you're already a step ahead because you've looked into what it is the course is going to cover, and you can ask intelligent questions and the like from the very first day that you're in class. So it's not only to prevent academic loss, you can use the summer to accelerate.
So you have some specific tips that you are going to share for our listeners live, or whether they're listening in the archives. I love saying that because that means we're talking into the future. But yeah, so you have specific tips.
Yeah, I have a few things that I'd like to share with the learning, you can see where my mind is, with the listening audience. I mean, one of the main things is to get started immediately. I know there's this thought, oh, you know, my student has worked so hard over the course of the year. Let's just take 2 weeks off. I'm not saying you have to take them to the library and get as many books as, you know, their arms will hold, but I wouldn't procrastinate on this. The key thing with students is to get them reading. And if they read about something that they really like, they're not going to find it as much of a chore. It's not going to be as arduous to them. When my son was young, there was a particular series of books that I used to read to him, Alice in Bible Land. And it was all these different Bible stories, and they were written in rhyme. So he was very fascinated with them. But every single book in Alice in Bible Land started out somewhere in about the first page where it would be said, reading is the magic key to take you where you want to be. And I think that's something that we really should keep in mind, that reading is, in fact, fundamental. It's very, very critical. And so families can be reading with their students. They can be reading to their students if they're younger children. And whether it's your child's school reading list, whether it's a summer reading list from the library, you can go online. There are all sorts of age-appropriate reading lists. There are community organizations that are getting involved in summer reading. In fact, at my church, Crescent Avenue Presbyterian Church, this year we are kicking off the Read to Feed program. And basically what our students are doing is they're reading books, our Sunday school students, they're reading books, they're having people sponsor their reading, and the monies that they bring in through the sponsorships, they will donate to Heifer International to help purchase livestock for disadvantaged people around the world. And so we're excited, you know, that they have an opportunity to have their reading work for people who are less fortunate than themselves. That's not going to cost anybody to be involved, but just to go to the library, get some books. You can get books all over the place now. I mean, there's really no excuse for our students not to be reading, and it means having some discipline in the family. Our students are on screens way too long, and I saw a clip. I wish I had really had more foresight to copy down where I even saw this. It was, you know, just one of the short snippets that came on about some of these tech giants who are now seeing how detrimental too much screen time can be. And many of them have their children in very elite private schools, and they don't even get on their on computers and their smartphones and all of that until they're in the 7th and 8th grade. They're doing all kinds of learning projects that require their creative thinking and their critical thinking. And so we should be doing the same kinds of things with our children, and that is limiting their screen time and making sure that they're reading. So if a student wants to read about baseball, that's fine. Somewhere along the way in that book, there's probably going to be a word or two that that student does not understand, and she or he will get out the dictionary and look up the word. Another thing you would want to do is not only capitalize on maybe your student's summer reading program through the school or through the library or through a church or another community agency, I would say using some sort of a tutor is really excellent. You know, if I as a parent or grandparent feel a little bit uncertain, I'm uncomfortable, then one-on-one tutoring or one-to-small group is very, very useful for a student, because that tutor can keep that child focused. And as I said, there are teenagers that will tutor for community service hours, or obviously their tutoring charges are going to be a lot less than, you know, some of the big name tutoring organizations now. In addition to engaging our students in reading projects, we should encourage their writing. I've been reading essays to give out scholarship monies to students, and I think most of us who are in the educational field nowadays feel that the writing of today's students is not up to par. Part of that reason is they're not strong readers. And when you're not a strong reader, then your writing is not going to be as it should be, especially if you're not corrected all along the way. So we encourage reading. We also encourage writing. So whether our students write summer book reports, or they journal their day, or they write poetry, or they write little, they pretend they're journalists and they write newsletter articles, let them write letters. My goodness. You know, if we stop texting and maybe write grandma a letter who lives across the country, that might be a great way to encourage the students' writing. But these things are important. Daily, there should be some academic learning going on. And you can be creative and look for opportunities for students, age-appropriate opportunities for students to engage in summer learning. If you go online, any parent or grandparent, oh my goodness gracious, there are so many free resources online. You know, whether you search reading or you search hands-on activities. I saw one website today. It's activebeat.com, and it has family activities, family learning activities. But there are just a number of websites that people can go on and get themselves, you know, some free resources. There are also, if you go to these teacher stores like Lakeshore or Becker's, I know Becker's closed in our particular community in the Blue Star Mall, but Lakeshore teacher store is still open. And they have these, they call them summer bridge books, and they will actually help your student. Let's say you have a student in grade 4, you get a summer bridge book for that student, and it will help them to review the work that they had in grade 4 and begin to take them into some of the work that they may be getting in grade 5. And that's particularly important to do, I think, as far as math is concerned, because our students, many of our students tend to be a little weaker in math. I would also recommend educational day trips. Again, I know people say, I don't have money, it's tough out here, and it is. I agree. Libraries are free. Many museums are free. The planetarium may not cost that much. You can take a child. I know the town that I live in, which is Somerset, we have Colonial Park, which is one of the most fabulous parks, I think, in Somerset County, and there's a garden there. You have Duke Gardens. There are hiking trails and biking trails. You know, you have to kind of search these things out. The Watchung Reservation, that's a great place for people to take their children and explore nature and maybe, you know, write a little poem about what they saw that day or a little essay about their day trip. But the key thing is starting immediately and engaging the student. Hands-on learning is what you want them to do. You go to the library. There are science experiments you can do at home. There's other project-based learning. And if you say to yourself, well, you know, I don't really have time to take my student to the library. I'm working two jobs. That is understandable. But maybe once a week or twice a week, you cook. You cook with your student. They have to read the recipes if you use a recipe. They have to gather the ingredients. Yes, it takes a lot of patience. I know we don't want them making a mess in the kitchen, but it's a great learning experience. Baking something from scratch, great learning experience. Putting together a puzzle, it builds patience. And it also helps with visual, spatial reference points. And at the end of putting together a 500-piece puzzle or a 1,000-piece puzzle, it can be glued and framed and matted, and the student has a feeling of accomplishment. So there are many, many things that can be done that don't really cost a lot of money. Summer camp and things like that, unless you get your child into a special program, can be costly. But camps are great because then there are supervised activities and generally professional counselors and, of course, the peer engagement, which is helpful. But you've got to be, as a parent or grandparent, strategic and very intentional about what you're going to have your student do.
Ms. Dijanesh, let me ask something. How do other countries, especially those who are recognized as being the more advanced educationally, you know, at the top rung of average in terms of education, do you have any idea how they manage this? Is this something that is part of their just culture and their school systems? Do other cultures and countries do things differently than the United States?
Well, certainly cultures vary in how they approach education, how important they deem education. I have found, as an educator, that there is a very big difference between American black students and African or Caribbean black students in terms of the, and I don't want to paint everybody with this broad brush, but I have found this from my own personal experience. Many educators talk about it, and let's just think about it. This kind of makes sense. You're coming from a country, let's say, and you have far less advantages, and it's constantly almost pummeled into you that education is the gateway to opportunity. Your parents, your grandparents, people expect you to do well, and they don't let you get involved. They're very strict. You're not allowed to get involved in a lot of ancillary and extra things that would take your time away from studies. The more you do something, the better you get at it. You know, this is really not rocket science. And so if you insist that children read books, if you insist that children study music or they are cultivated in some other area, be it music or art or something like that, if you insist upon that, then the student is going to make progress. I think if we're too lackadaisical, we say, oh, well, you know, if he wants to read, then that's okay. He can read. But you know what? As long as he's out of my hair, he can sit on and, you know, play video games or whatever. No, wrong. That the amount of screen time that our students here in America are engaging in, it's deleterious to them. It's dangerous. And, you know, they're not stimulating creative thought, critical thinking. They're not engaging with other people, being able to have conversations with people and so forth. And sometimes, you know, we have to have a little heavier hand. The patients should not be running the asylum. You know, I mean, the parents and the adults are the older ones with the experience. And we don't have to come across like, you know, we're the meanest people on earth. But, I mean, I have a daughter, you know it. I have a daughter 45 and a son 25. And they'll tell you in a minute, summertime didn't make a difference. We had lots of fun. You know, a tradition with my kids is I would get them up, take them to the sunrise. But they didn't get a chance to just see the sunrise. We had to discuss the sunrise. They had to write about the sunrise. And so we had fun, lots of memorable activities, but there was always that academic component. And we went on lots of day trips, and I really didn't have a lot of money. And quite honestly, especially when we were starting our school, we sacrificed a lot monetarily to start our school. And so I was always looking for the cheap date. And there are plenty of, you know, there are day trip books that you can get, and you don't have to go and buy them. You go to the library and, you know, just pick out a few trips for yourself. Sometimes a trip is just going to the neighboring town. You know, if you live in Plainfield, go to Westfield, see what they do over there. I mean, really, it's just, you know, people say a park is a park is a park. That's not true. Spring Lake Park is different from Colonial Park. That's different from Johnson Park. I mean, my goodness, Johnson Park isn't that far away from Plainfield. They've got a little zoo there and other sorts of things. I found that when my children were young, you could go to Johnson Park and the children are playing together and you could hear some 5, 6, 7 languages spoken among the children right there in the park. And children, when they're ages 3 to 7, that's when they most quickly pick up a foreign language. And so if you were exposing your child to playmates who spoke, you know, whatever, Yiddish, or they spoke Russian, or they, you know, spoke one of they spoke Hindi or something like that. You know, I don't even know if Hindi is a language. Gujarat, I know that's a language. That's one of the Indian languages. They would pick up words, and that would be wonderful, you know? So we really just have to be intentional about what we're going to expose our children to. And the neat thing about the library, Daryl, is it's air-conditioned, and it doesn't matter how much it's raining. You can take your children there, and they can gain so much from it, from story hours and hands-on projects and other things that they do in the library.
I agree. The library to me is just so underappreciated, generally speaking. But that was helpful as you spoke about the expectations of other cultures with regard to their children and what's going on in their academics. It's not just so much their system as the parents and or guardians or those who have a vested interest in the child that's involved. Part of that culture.
Yeah, they have very high expectations, and I also notice high engagement. Of late, I walk through a supermarket, and I will see people of different cultures literally engaging with their students. Okay, what fruit do we have here? What color is the fruit? How many ounces is in this bottle? Yes, it does take longer to go through the supermarket, but my goodness, a supermarket is a veritable fount of learning. opportunities that just flows and flows and flows as you go from one aisle to the other. You have different size boxes and bottles and textures of fruit and all of that. I see moms of certain cultures engaging their children in the learning that can go on in a supermarket. And then say it to same moms in some other cultures, just stop touching that. Get over here. I don't want you to go over there. Don't get. And the poor child is getting all of the don'ts, do not, shut up, instead of literally engaging them. I've seen parents in playgrounds. They're going down the slide with their children. They're not on the phone texting their friend. I mean, if we want our children to really ascend numerous rungs on the academic ladder, we have to be engaged with them from the time. I mean, you should read to them when they're in the womb, actually. But children should be read to from the time they're born. Turn that TV off, turn that video game off, to shut down the phone. It's basically screen time. Just shut it down and then really engage with students. That will make them more verbal. Many of our students go to school and they're behind a million words because people have not talked to them and not engaged them. And many of them don't have the math sense that they should have. So preschool programs are wonderful, and some of the better preschool programs help parents to continue to engage with the students after they leave the classroom. Because really, when you think about it, Darryl, the home is the first classroom, and parents are the first teachers. And there's nothing wrong with learning together. It's okay.
That is so true. As you said, those formative years, just speaking the language, yes, no, mom, dad, those basic things, can I have? When they get to that preschool, they're talking. So where did they learn that? So you're absolutely 110% right, or 200%. Learning does start at the home.
And we should be causing our children to speak in complete sentences and write in complete sentences. And that just means disciplining them. So if we ask them a question, then we should not hear something like, "'cause I'm going to do thus and so." So, whomever. Even if you say sweetheart, if you say Chaquan, if you say, what are you going to do? What I'm going to do today is play soccer. It should be a complete sentence. Who we put in front of our children to model, whenever possible, we should be putting our children, not necessarily always in programs, but if they're in programs where their peers will stimulate learning as well. But it's good to just put them among people where education is respected, where education is expected. And that will help them in terms of how much they're going to want to be an educated individual.
In Silicon Valley's an example. I've heard and seen programs and read various articles and informational sources. Where it's gotten so bad in some instances where there is a mindset that America just doesn't have enough resources to fill the technical slots, getting into that math conversation you were just talking about, and that they have to recruit overseas for some of these positions.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It lends to what I believe you were just saying, about that educational piece beginning at home, because there's so many distractions right now. And I have also seen, believing there's no coincidence, that some of those other cultures and countries at some levels, they don't allow that free will to have that video game and you stay on it as long as you want. And that's the babysitter.
Oh, no. You're lucky if you get on it once a week. No, honestly, I mean, it's amazing. You know, they write these books and talk about tiger moms and that kind of thing. But the way that many of these students excel is it's quite amazing. Now, there has to be a balance. I mean, it's very important in life that we have balance. We don't want the children hating learning and the like. But if we leave them to their own devices, if we left them to their own devices to eat, they're not going to pick Brussels sprouts and broccoli and spinach. They'll pick, you know, rum raisin ice cream and cotton candy and pizza, whatever, and they'd make that a steady diet. But you see where I'm headed with it. There has to be balance in life. Now, if we constantly give children what they want to eat, if we constantly feed them in between meals, like they're going to die if, you know, we don't feed them every hour on the hour, well, quite naturally, they're not going to eat their dinner. If we give them 14 choices for dinner, oh, so you don't like peas, well, then I'll make you asparagus. No, you know what I mean? Now, if in your family, I know I'm sounding very old school, that's fine, I don't care. I make no apologies about it, because there are certain things that have been working since time immemorial. They will continue to work, and there are some things that don't work. And unfortunately, when we give children way too many choices, notice I didn't say don't give them a choice, but we give them way too many choices, and we don't instill in them the discipline that they need to have in this life to be solid academically, then those children are going to lose out. And that's what happens. They lose out.
Now, that's exactly what I believe has been happening. So, for those high school students, great tips. What about post-high school? Now they're preparing for the next level. What are your thoughts and suggestions for?
Post high school is an exciting time because they are now moving into, in many cases, the college arena, or they're going to a vocational school where they're picking up a trade and that's their passion. You know, some people are mechanically inclined, or they do very, very well, let's say, in cosmetology or some other areas where you literally can, with your hands, make a way. They're going out on their own. They're going to have to manage their time. They're going to have to manage their friends, what their group of acquaintances will consist of. They're going to have to be able to prioritize the various and sundry opportunities that they have. And it's good to take advice from people who've been there, done that. I say that every post-high school student should have a mentor. Somebody who might be already somewhat accomplished or in the field that they're looking to go into, or at least a few years ahead of them. Because what they want to do is shorten their learning curve. I mean, a wise man learns from his own mistakes. A wiser man still learns from the mistakes of others. And so if I can learn from your mistakes and shorten my learning curve, then that's so much the better for me. Especially since the stakes are very, very high now. Some students are going to schools where they're coming out with quite a bit of debt. Well, you don't want to waste your courses and then pile more debt upon yourself because now you have to take two or three more courses, you know, perhaps that you wouldn't have had to take before had you handled your time differently or capitalized on your opportunities and so forth. So, I mean, one of the things I would say is students who are going post-high school should really look at their options, try to go to the school that not only they're interested in so that they can pursue their major, but they really should, in addition to getting that mentor, having a good peer group, is they really should look at how much debt they're going to incur going through the experience. When our son was going off to college, and he graduated in 2015, he is a music major. He auditioned for seven schools. He got into all seven schools academically, but his piano audition for one school was not suitable, and he did not get into that school. So he had a preference for the other six schools, and it was considerably more. He just had a comfort zone for that particular school. And we actually made a family decision. And so he went to the school that fulfilled all the criteria that he was interested in, but it's pretty bottom line. For us, it was the school that gave him the most in scholarships so that when he came out of school, he didn't have as much debt as he would have had. Now, it's okay to carry some debt because then you learn how to have good credit. You know, you want to make sure you have good credit history and so forth. But if you're so overwhelmed with debt that you then can't even think about going to graduate school because you're still paying off undergraduate school, then that hampers your future opportunities. So these are things that our students have to think about.
What is your thoughts about a student taking some time off for going into
school? Oh, a gap year? A gap year. They call it, they can take a year or 2 years off. They call them gap years. Well, it was good enough for Michelle Obama. She took a gap year before she went off to Harvard. I think a gap year is, for those students that want to do it, is very, very wise, quite honestly. You know, if they've suffered some burnout from high school, they can take that gap year. They can travel. I am a big proponent of travel because there are so many things you can learn about other people, about yourself, about places, you know, people, places, and things. If you travel, you can, during that year, save up some money. I mean, there's just a lot of things you could do in a gap year. And gap years are not frowned upon, maybe like they might have been years ago. You could also take maybe just one or two courses in a gap year and get your feet wet. What I will say to some students, if they know that they're weak in, let's say, foreign language, or they're weak in maybe basic math courses that they might have to take in college, they could take that course over the summer so that they have more time, or they could take those courses in their gap year so that they have more time to concentrate on them. And by having more time to concentrate on them, then they might be able to pull a higher grade, keep their GPA up, because there's always more money available for you the higher your GPA is. So these are all, you know, things that they can consider as well. What's the big rush? You know, you graduate at 21, you graduate at 22. What's the big deal? But that 1 year could make a huge amount of difference, and it could make a difference in a student's EQ, you know, their emotional quotient, their sociability, their stability, their, you know, just their ability to handle social situations with more finesse if they take that year off, rather than running right into college. And especially those of our students that, well, I just want to get away from home, and they go, you know, several states away. They can't even get home, and then they find themselves floundering.
Okay, so you are saying that it's not frowned upon as much as it was, I guess, sometime in the past.
Definitely not. In fact, it's actually, you can sell a gap year. You know, you can sell it to people when you show them what kinds of activities you engaged in as a student in that gap year. Now, if you're just, you know, hanging out at home and you're doing much of nothing, well, then a gap year probably isn't very good for you. But if you're really using it to engage in various enterprises that you might not be able to do if you were in college, you could use a gap year to immerse yourself in a foreign language. You could use a gap year to travel. You could use a gap year to do an internship. There are so many things you could do with a gap year. So especially our students who were born maybe a little later in the year. Again, I'll use my son as an example. He was born in October the 12th. And so in some school districts, he would have been held back for kindergarten. I had put him in a Christian school, and their cutoff was October 31st rather than October 1st. And so I homeschooled him kindergarten. He went into first grade. And actually, he could do the work, but in hindsight, I think it might have been more advantageous for him to have started school in first grade the next year. He would have been a little older, more mature. Now, he could have taken a gap year, and then he would have just been basically where some of his peers or the age some of his peers would have been when he went into college. So, I mean, I think you have to really look at so many different factors. But a gap year really can be very, very advantageous.
Okay, I think that's encouraging for a lot of folks. That not just from a financial perspective who may not feel like they have that, but even those that do, students that just, you know, are not sure the direction and so I, for various reasons that you just mentioned, that's encouraging that is something that is you know readily accepted, given, as you said, that there's a track record that the individual had some thought behind the and rationale behind the gap year. I definitely can see where that could be beneficial for so many situations. You know, we've been talking about the post grad at the high school level, and then during the grade school level in between grades, in terms of like the summer slide and that. I wanted to take a few moments talk about something sort of off this beaten path, but generally related, that is so many adult students now are beginning to look at going back to school, re-educating because of the way technology has occurred. What are your general thoughts about that? I think we're seeing more and more going back to school at an older age. As an example, my sister went back to school she's my older sister, so by a couple of years. And I think about 15 years ago she went back and got a degree in business because she wanted to just get some background for a business she wanted to start. So I think I'm seeing more and more of this now, especially as, I guess, 50 is the new 60 or however that goes. Maybe I reversed it. Living longer. Folks are doing things at older ages now. You know, like they say, this is not your grandmom's age era.
Well, my personal opinion is that we should all be lifelong learners. We should not give up on learning new things. And if we have the opportunity to go back to school, older students can really add a lot to an educational experience. A few years ago, I was looking into getting my doctorate, something that I wanted really very much to do. However, taking 2 years to establish my own school, operate that school for 7 years. The school's been closed now, really, for, what is it, it'll be six years this August. But still, the amount of financial stresses and strains that my family went through for us to start the school, keep the school running and the like, because it was a private school, that really siphoned off any funds that I would have been able to deploy to get a doctorate. But I looked very seriously into it, actually probably in 2014, maybe 2013, 2014. I looked at a number of schools. I visited campuses. I had a chance to stay at one campus all day on Saturday and see how the cohort functioned. Oh, my gosh, Daryl, I was like so excited over the thought that I might go back to school. Now, some people just love academic environments, and I think I'm one of them. However, even if you, like me, you can't really afford to go back to school per se, because I'm going to be 69, and I looked at what would be the return on my investment based on the amount of money I would have to spend to get a doctorate and so forth. You can still read voraciously. If you can travel, then you travel. There are plenty of ways to enhance your learning. But I say for those people who can go back to school, especially as it relates to making yourself prepared for where the jobs of the future are going to be, you definitely should do it. They should avail themselves of every opportunity to go back to school and not feel like, oh, I'm too old, because the younger students in the classes can learn wonderful things from the older students and vice versa. When we have generational interaction, even our study teams really have the best of both worlds, because you have those, you know, who might be more tech savvy than students who perhaps are not as facile with the technology, but they have life experience, and together they can make, you know, an awesome team to, you know, to produce some excellent work. But if we have a modality of thinking that is, I will be a lifelong learner, I will not be afraid to study new things, to be with new people, to go to new places that I've never been before, then we're always going to grow. You see, some people stay in their comfort zone, Daryl, and the thing about the comfort zone is that nothing good ever grows there. If you're in a comfort zone, you're not going to grow. So you have to just like flex your muscles and expand your boundaries, and there's nothing like going back to school to do that. And if you can, then I say go for it.
What do you think about the rising cost of education? I mean, I know, of course, you'd say, well, it's a shame or whatever, but give us a little bit more meat on that bone. It just seems like it's skyrocketing. Is this
I mean, if you look at the comparative costs over the last decades in private colleges in particular, oh my gosh, the costs have skyrocketed. I gave my age just a few minutes ago. I'm a product of New York public education. I got my undergraduate degree from Hunter College. All I paid for was books and registration fee. I got my master's degree from City University of New York, and that was pretty much the same type of thing. So I had scholarships. I could have gone to HBCUs and so forth, but I chose at that time for a couple of reasons to stay in New York and to get my education through the CUNY system, and I had excellent education. We now have presidential candidates that are talking about free college for all, you know, community colleges being free and that type of thing. I think there should be some sort of option for financially challenged individuals to get an education. Believe me, if somebody would fund my doctorate, I'd go lickety-split. You know, if there was a way I could do it and it wasn't cost prohibitive, I would do it. But people have to think about how much debt. I have two friends. They're in their 60s. They just finished getting their master's. They are in so much debt, it's ridiculous. And now they have health issues, and I don't know how they're ever going to get out from under. Yes, they both have master's degrees now, but they're almost too sick to even capitalize on them in terms of job opportunities. So there is a timing factor relative to going to school, and I think with the rising cost of education, people have to be sensible so that they're not overburdened with debt. And hopefully, maybe what's going on politically in our nation, there will be more options for free, you know, for free or at least reduced tuition rate colleges, you know, for some of our students to get their education. The next generation commits to excess, And so it just keeps getting more and more excessive. I do the parenting workshop, and it's primarily from a Christian focus. I did start a book, a companion book, and I've been so busy the last actually 2 years with, I call them end-of-life issues. My mom has Alzheimer's, and my husband and I have stepped in to be powers of attorney for my godmother, who has a different type of dementia. That my book has just been like sitting and lying dormant, but hopefully over the summer I'll be able to get back to it. And one of the main reasons why I'm writing it is because so many of our younger mothers may not have older women to be a guide. And the Bible itself says the older women shall teach the younger women. I know that when I was a young mom, I didn't have a clue. And there were older women who just shared lovingly but wisely things with me that made a huge difference. And there are things I think that we can do as the village to help one another. Generationally, we should be in contact with one another. And there are things that we can and should be teaching our children, and it will help them enormously and help us in the process as we develop them to be, you know, the wonderful human beings that they were designed to be.
That's beautiful. That's eloquent. Now, speaking of books, before we go off the air, because we're going to want you to come back and have some more dialogue about the growth of our society, because I think that's what this platform's to. Once we have the dialogue about education and what we're doing, because our children, they are future. Now what do we do as a society as a whole? How do we intermingle? Like you're saying, okay, we've kind of got the children with some kind of a model, this being your perfect world, if you will. Have a model in place, and several models, some are slide, and some other theory. Now, okay, we've got to engage in our elders who are still playing a very relevant role in this society. And so I'd like to, just speaking ahead, get into some of that discourse of how do we productively pull all this together as a society, and then breaking that down into some of our communities, some of our specific cultures and communities, Black and Latino. So how do we think about how we can move that forward in a progressive way in terms of models and thoughts and discourse there? I want to get into your book a little bit, your most recent book that you put out, What God Can Do with a Slice of Bread and a Teaspoon of Peanut Butter. I mentioned earlier on, started, you know, you're very much as much as of an educator as a motivational on our communities and society. So talk a little bit about that, and I want to encourage our listeners take a look at that read and from the perspective of why you wrote it, and only you can tell that.
Well, thank you for asking about the book. It's funny, I never really thought myself to be much of a writer, but the school project came about in a very, very interesting way. This book is about the 2 years that it took to start our academy, the first year that it was open, and then I added an afterward because the school did have to close in 2013. We started from the very, very humble beginnings of only $250, and, you know, we believed that God was calling us to have this this academy in Plainfield where we would train academically equipped, spiritually minded leaders. It was a leadership academy who would make a difference in the world. And we, you know, when we first started out, we had no building, we had no teachers, we had no students, but we had a vision. And it did take us 2 years to open the school, and that's really what the book talks about. But I think because it was a faith walk, the book really isn't so much about school or education. It's about two ordinary people walking by faith and not by sight and being used of the Lord to do a particular thing that we really felt we were called to do. I would have never written a book, but what would happen literally is I would tour people through the school and I'd tell them a little bit about how the school got started, and they would say, "Oh my goodness, what a story. You need to write a book." Well, after I heard that maybe 9 or 10 times, I started thinking to myself, well, maybe I should write a book. It took me about 2.5 years to write it. The initial version of the book did not have an afterword. It did not have a photo gallery in it. And when the school closed, I literally had pretty much sold the copies that were printed, and I threw it in the bottom of my file cabinet. And then someone asked me to read a copy of the book, and I said, nah, I don't know. I don't think it's relevant. The school's closed now, and I don't even know if I can find the book. And I gave it to this individual, and when he read it, it's a pretty fast read. He came back to me and he said, no, you've got to get this out again. It just so, I guess, fueled his faith and encouraged him. So, you know, I talked about the possible ways that I could just add to the book. And that's what I did by writing the afterword. And the afterword actually talks about how the school had to close. It was pretty devastating. The afterword also discusses my husband's heart transplant. And actually, you know, God knew that it probably was better for us not to be so actively engaged in the school when we went through that particular journey of him, you know, getting a new heart. But overall, I think it is more of a book of faith, and that it doesn't matter what you bring to the table. God can use you, and just like that little boy with his lunch, the five, you know, the five loaves and the two fishes, you know, God used that little boy. And, you know, we say we had a slice of bread and a teaspoon of peanut butter. God used us. The school was formed, and even now, you know, some of the students who went to our school continue to do well, and they point back to, you know, many of the lessons that they learned in our academy, and we still continue to work with students now through scholarshiping and other efforts that we're engaged in. But, you know, people who have read it say that it does inspire them to never give up, and I think that's a pretty good thing to do.
Well, I encourage all of our listeners to take a read of the book. It's a beautiful read. How can someone get their hands on the book? And if they wanted to reach out to you for information or what you spoke on tonight, of course, they can always reach out to Progressive News Weekly. But if they wanted to reach out to you directly or talk with you,
yeah, they can actually get the book on our website. And what they should know is that the proceeds from the book help our scholarship fund. So our website is www, of course, got to throw those W's in there, N as in Nancy, C as in Charles, C as in Charles, A as in Apple, I as in whatever, igloo, N as in Nancy, C as in Charles, .org, www.nccainc.org.
And
if they go right on our website, they can purchase the book, you know, using our secure PayPal account. And if they want to reach out to me directly, because I do workshops, I do motivational speaking, ladies retreats, that type of thing, they can reach me at 732-545-9422, 732-545-9422. And I would hate to say what my favorite thing to do is, but I do like ladies' retreats. God has worked marvelously in my life, on ladies' retreats or on retreats. And I think when we can get away, ponder, reflect, interact with like-minded people, we come back so inspired, ready to do great things.
That's beautiful. So as we enter into summer, and I'm hopeful we can get you back before summer is over, but what do you leave as this has been a pretty good week, a little warm, but not any rain. What do you leave with our listeners in terms of a word of wisdom, Ms. Stephanie?
I've been going through quite a bit with, I alluded to them earlier on, the end-of-life issues and so forth. And, certain things in life are inevitable. It's not if they happen to us, it's when they happen to us. We can't control certain things, but we can control our response to things. And that simple little prayer, I know I have it hanging in my kitchen. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think if we all just function that way daily, then we will do more of the things that God would have us to do. We'd be more prepared, I believe, to be receptive to what comes our way and to respond appropriately.
Beautiful. Doing more of what God would have. Just think if everyone on the planet did that, what kind of a place this would be, what God would have you to do. It's such a beautiful thing. I was thinking about something this morning. I was reading on salvation, on health, harmony, freedom, what those three things really are. And without health,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. It's also important to have that harmony as well. Yourself, first of all.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's just, it's so important that we really look at the things that we engage in. There are some things that we should absolutely engage in and other things we should walk away from. And you know how we can be. The things we ought not to engage in, that's what we're engaging in. And the things that, we should do, we don't do. So we've got to flip that script, so that we're actually doing the things that we should be doing. And sometimes the thing we should be doing is resting and thinking,
yeah,
and reflecting. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a very good thing to do.
Yes, so very important. I talk about that all the time. I try to speak of some health issue as a nutritionist and naturopath, and I'm focusing more and more on that energy as I seek God's guidance. And I'm going to be doing a meditation sessions at one of the local martial arts schools in Scotch Plains, in fact, on South on 2nd Street. I'm going to be doing meditation sessions on Friday going forward. It's something that came to me from knowing my background. And so it is important sometimes not to just be doing something, but sometimes to not be doing something.
That's right. That's right. They're both equally important. My dad, before he passed away, and it's been some time now. He passed away in 2001, but my dad was such a wise individual, and he would tell me, Stephanie, leave it alone. And you know, when you're young, you just always want to be doing. You think you can fix it, and sometimes you just need to leave things alone, and just wait, and see what's going to come of it. And that's hard to do, Daryl. It's very, very hard to do. But I guess the older I get and the wiser I get, I can really appreciate what Daddy said. Yeah, sometimes we just need to leave it alone.
Well, you know what? We're not going to leave you alone, because we're going to be back talking with you sometime soon. We appreciate you. We appreciate what you do. Listeners, we've been talking with Ms. Stephanie DeJeunesse, educator, author, community advocate, motivational speaker, and, well, I believe above all, humanitarian. She is truly a lover of life and a lover of humanity. And we love you, DeJeunesse. We truly do. Keep doing what you're doing. We will put you in prayer, you and your loved ones, and keep you in prayer. Do the same for us, because we know, you and I, prayer works. No,
it sure does.
So we're going to do that. So I'm going to close out. I don't know. Again, this just came to me. Michael Jackson, I think it was this week that he passed.
Yeah, it was. So, this was the anniversary week, I think. Or at least in June. I know he passed away in June. So,
this week it was. Monday or Tuesday, somewhere in there. I caught it. Just a glimpse of it on the radio. So, I end with one of his songs, Keep the Faith, one of my favorite ones that he did. Not really that greatly popular, but one of my favorites, and that's what we're going to do, Stephanie. We're going to keep the faith, and where we have to, leave it alone, and God, hopefully, our prayer will grant us that serenity that you talk about. God bless you, Stephanie. We love you.
Oh, thank you so much, Daryl. God bless you, too. It's always an honor to be on your show.
My
thank
pleasure.
You. Goodbye.